You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 298 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this Sunday evening. Of course, the Hawks were in action on Saturday night, and that's what this, Saturday afternoon, I should say, and that's what most of this podcast will be about. But at the same time, there's a couple of news items to hit on, so we will touch on those here at the beginning of the podcast. Since the last time we recorded, we got actually the firm news on John Collins' injury. When we last talked, there was a, Collins was already ruled out for the game on Saturday in Brooklyn, but there was no definitive timetable and or diagnosis for him, and now, of course, we have that with the Hawks announcing on Saturday morning that Collins had suffered a left AC joint sprain during the fourth quarter of the game against Cleveland. The injury was confirmed, it says, following MRI at Emory Sports Medicine Complex, and he is going to be missed, of course, 2 to 3 weeks with the injury. That was first reported by Shams Charania and then confirmed by the Hawks, of course, in this release. Honestly, this is something I said on Twitter after the fact. This is actually pretty good news. There were certainly some more doomsday scenarios with Collins. Of course, you never want a guy to be injured at all. But, all things considered, only missing 2 or 3 weeks here with the injury and not having it be serious or needing surgery, anything like that, is a very, very good thing for John Collins. Of course, he's been tremendous this season in his rookie role and his rookie stint, and it leaves the Hawks quite shorthanded, as we talked about in the last podcast. No Dedmon, no Collins, and Mike Muscala still being out of the lineup. They are very, very shorthanded in the front court, undermanned, you might say. But it's a rough situation in terms of the on-court product right now for the Hawks. But on the bright side, only 2 or 3 weeks of absence for John Collins is a very good thing compared to what some of the alternatives may have been in this spot. Other than that, in terms of news, just a couple of housekeeping items. Tyler Dorsey was recalled from the G League in Erie before the game on Saturday. Josh Majette was sent down to the G League before the game on Saturday. And Nick Brasino was actually recalled on Sunday evening before Monday's home game against the Nets. So all that to say, I'm not going to be a huge impact on the Atlanta club at this point in time with any of those. Majette was the one guy who was playing out of these three guys with the Hawks. But, of course, the return of Isaiah Taylor pretty much renders that moot for the most part, as not even Malcolm Lennon can seem to get on the court right now. And, the Hawks are dealing with a two-way clock on Majette, so it does make some sense to send him down with Taylor being healthy and save some bullets if you need him back later on in the season for some insurance. Brasino, sort of up and down stint in Erie. Not to say that he's been necessarily bad with the BayHawks this season, but his numbers are just okay. 9.4 points, 5.8 rebounds, 3.6 assists in 8 games with Erie, and only about 23 minutes a game. He's shooting the ball reasonably well, 47% from the floor, 37% from three. He had one very, very good game that also had a lot of turnovers when he had a lot of usage. Aside from that, sort of a little bit, relatively uninspiring. I continue to think if the Hawks were to, desperately need a roster spot and wanted to keep a guy, or, if Tyler Kavanaugh's clock runs out, they want to keep him around, etc., Brasino would be the obvious choice to move on from if the Hawks want to do that. I'm not sure, but obviously loves Brasino considering the fact that he's not been playing really at all when he's around and for the most part has been inactive. But at the same time, it is noteworthy, and he'll be, I presume, in Atlanta on Monday when the Hawks take on the Nets in a rematch. With all that said, let me remind you guys, if you've not already done this, and I'm sure a lot of you have, but for those of you who have not, please subscribe to the podcast. It is really, really appreciated. It helps us quite a bit if you subscribe and rate the podcast, give us a review as well, especially on Apple Podcasts, but whatever platform that you listen to the show on. It really helps the show to grow and get some more exposure, get a lot more listeners, tell your friends as well, but subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It goes a long way, as well as the rest of the Locked On Network. I encourage you guys, check out your favorite NFL team, perhaps. If you're a Falcons fan, not a great result on Sunday, but at the same time, it's a good show to check out if you want to do that, etc. So please do that for me, and I will really appreciate it. With that said, we can move on to the game from Saturday, the 114-102 win over the Brooklyn Nets. A very, very interesting and an encouraging result on a number of levels. The Hawks entered this game as about a 5-point underdog in Brooklyn. Atlanta being wildly shorthanded in the front court is probably not the worst situation in the world against the Nets, because frankly, Brooklyn's front line has been a point of emphasis all year for me in my sort of greater NBA work, is that Brooklyn's front line is kind of decimated in general, not even because of injury, just because of the way that they've constructed their roster. For instance, in this game, they started Tyler Zeller and Trevor Booker. as the starting 4 and 5 with Jared Allen, the rookie, who I kind of like actually as a primary backup along with Quincy Acy. So not a ton of size, at least not a ton of quality size. T-Bone Bosgoff was actually a DNP in this game. And yeah, Brooklyn's front line is not one that's going to be able to take advantage in a way that a lot of other teams would. With that said, the Hawks going in and winning without their top three centers in this game is pretty impressive on a number of levels. So sort of big picture stuff to hit on here. Miles Plumlee came out pretty early in this game. He did start actually, and which was not a huge surprise considering the way that the roster laid out, but still pretty noteworthy because he had not even played much, much less started a game in a Hawks uniform. Only played 19 minutes. Did have four fouls, so there were some foul concerns. Also played very, very short stints before the game. You know, Bud talked about that on camera with Andre Aldridge and Fox Sports. He's probably not in the greatest conditioning. Not the worst thing in the world for him. Not his fault. Necessarily, he's not been playing big minutes for a long time. It's just different to play game speed, so not a huge surprise. But he came out within 4 minutes for Tyler Cavanaugh, and they really kept his bursts on the court into very, very short stints. In fact, the opening of the game was not exactly great, honestly, for the Hawks. They shot 2 of 11 from the floor in the first quarter to begin things, and they also only shot 31% from the field in the first quarter. Ended up leading, though, because of the way that they defended and the way they really attacked the offensive glass in that first quarter. Very encouraging. The game was sort of broken open a little bit when the Hawks went on a 14-0 run between the end of the first quarter and the early part of the second quarter, took a 10-point lead. They never actually put the game fully away until the fourth quarter, but from that point forward, they had control of things most of the way. Mike Budenholzer got a technical foul after a loose ball foul called on Plumlee in the second quarter. Bud was a little bit fired up in this game a couple of times. You could see it on the television broadcast that Bud was pretty ready and pretty competitive and sort of fiery in this game. No surprise there because he sort of lives his life that way, but he was a little bit even more on edge, and that foul call did not go a long way to pleasing him. In the first half, especially, the defense was quite good. On the whole in the game, the numbers weren't quite as encouraging, but in the first half, a 92.9 defensive rating. That's very, very good. In fact, the Nets actually shot the ball reasonably well, but the Hawks got 90% of the available defensive rebounds. That really, really helps. The Hawks are not exactly great on the defensive glass usually, but they were scrapping in this game, really attacking. And again, you know, Brooklyn's not very good on the offensive glass either, but still a very, very good performance there in terms of protecting possessions in a positive way. Also, the biggest highlight of the game for me, at least, was the Miles Plumlee hammer dunk in the third quarter. That was one for the ages. I encourage you guys to check that out and find it on Twitter or in the Peachtree Hoops recap that we did. It was a lot of fun to see Plumlee throw down a reverse dunk almost out of nowhere, and I did not see that coming, so that was a lot of fun to witness. Finally, the Hawks had an 18-3 run to take a 15-point lead in the final minutes. That actually basically sealed the game, obviously, as the Hawks ended up winning by 12, but that was what put the game away in the final 3 or 4 minutes, and Atlanta sort of, you know, dropped the hammer on a team on the road, which is very, 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 very nice, we should say. With that said, we can get some individual stuff to hit on the podcast today. Of course, the bench was quite good in this game. We'll start there first. Luke Babbitt had a big afternoon. 20 points on only 9 field goal attempts. He was 7 of 9. From the floor, 4 of 6 from 3, 2 of 3 from the free throw line. Played 21 minutes. He did not start in this game. I thought it was at least relatively noteworthy. You know, part of that, I'm sure, is that Ursula Nesova has been playing better basketball, and he, of course, was the incumbent starter this season. But Babbitt's been playing largely well, but he has been battling the back stuff. It looked pretty healthy in this game, I will say. 21 minutes only and have 20 points. It was a +8, and he played extremely well. DeAndre Bembry had arguably his best game of the season, 12 points, 5 rebounds, had 2 steals, as was a +13, was 5 of 11 from the floor, a very, very aggressive game from Bembry. His season high in shot attempts, and he was very very active with the ball in his hands. Always like to see that from DeAndre, and he's a guy who, one of the few guys on this roster that I really, really trust with the ball in their hands to create for himself and, you know, almost more importantly, for other people. Isaiah Taylor, another quality game here, 11 points, 3 assists, 2 rebounds, and 17 minutes. He was 5 of 9 from the floor and 1 of 2 from 3. Taylor, once again, was the primary backup for Dennis Schroeder in this game. In fact, all 48 minutes were occupied by those two guys at the point guard position. They did not play at all together in this game, which I thought was at least relatively noteworthy, but another DNP from Malcolm Delaney. I mentioned that a little bit earlier, but Delaney, people were asking me sort of what happened there, obviously, because I know I've been a pro-Malcolm guy for quite some time, but I have no issue with this at all, honestly. I think Taylor If he's not, definitely better. He's been playing better than Delaney, and he's much younger. He's under control for longer. I totally understand the Hawks wanting to go with Delaney going with Taylor over Delaney at this point in time. His upside is considerably higher in terms of his career stuff, and he's been very, very good when he's played this year. So no issue at all with that. My issue was when Delaney was not playing over Majette. That I don't really subscribe to, but with Majette not around and then Taylor in that role, I have no beef whatsoever, and I could totally see it as well. As an aside to that, Delaney's some of his best minutes this season have come off the ball, but with the return of DeAndre Bembry, there's really not that obvious playing time for him to be getting off the ball. Those are the minutes that he was taking when Bembry was out, when he was playing sort of with Schroeder or with Taylor, and with Bembry around, you're not gonna be playing Delaney off the ball ahead of Bembry or ahead of Bazemore or ahead of Bellinelli. That's sort of the way that cookie is crumbling right now for Malcolm Delaney. I mean, it would not surprise me at all if Bud went back to him at some point. Bud does this every once in a while. He'll give a guy, you know, 2-3 week stint when they're not playing, and then he'll go back to the other guy. But, you know, if Taylor keeps playing well, I would probably expect to see him be ridden to the finish line here as a backup point guard. And, again, the upside is higher. He's much younger, et cetera, on that one. Elsewhere on the bench, Marco Bellinelli, 9 points, 3 assists. He was only 3 of 9 from the floor, so one point per attempt is not exactly great in terms of efficiency for Marco, but a plus 10. He had a couple of big-time shots that were important to the Hawks winning this contest. And nothing bad really to say about Bellinelli's defense was not great here, but it never is. Finally, Tyler Cavanaugh, 4 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists off the bench in 21 minutes. I thought he actually could start in this game. He actually didn't end up doing that, of course. We talked about that with Plumlee at the beginning. Cavanaugh gave some functional center minutes. Again, my guard is up a little bit as to how this team's going to respond against an actual front line of largely NBA contributors, which I'm not sure Brooklyn actually is right now, but they get the Nets again on Monday, so we'll see how that looks. But Cavanaugh can hold up at center against guys who are not exactly dominant like Brooklyn. He played well in this game in his limited time. I will say, you know, for most of this game, if not the entirety of the game was won by the bench. The entire bench five that played, the Hawks played 10 guys in this game. All 5 guys that played off the bench had positive plus minuses, and Brooklyn's bench got really worked by Atlanta's bench throughout this game. And, you know, it's not going to be necessarily sustainable on that level, but they're playing well, you know, individually as well, and they got a lot of good minutes from the bench in this game. In terms of the starting five, Dennis Schroeder had the biggest statistical game, 24 points, 6 assists. It took him 24 shots to get 24 points, so I didn't think Dennis was particularly awesome here. I think it was noteworthy. I think it was Kale Schnarr that mentioned this first that I saw. Old pal Kenny Atkinson, the head coach of the Nets, was the guy who worked with Schroeder the closest in Atlanta. You could see their game plan was definitely to make him take mid-range jump shots above all else. That's something that I would certainly be doing against Dennis Schroeder. Not that he can't shoot that shot effectively, but it's certainly the most low percentage shot that he has in the arsenal. And, you know, I think the opposition will take 24 points and 24 shots for the most part, and that's what happened here. Again, you know, not awful by any means. He only had one turnover defensively. It wasn't quite as bad as he's been at certain times. So a pretty good game for Dennis, but it could have been more efficient if he knocked down some more shots or took some more quality looks. Kent Bazemore, a pretty innocuous game, 8 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 steals in 32 minutes. Only took 6 shots. Did make 2 of 3 from 3-point range. The Hawks were only 10 of 27 as a team. Not awful at all. 37%, pretty solid. But it wasn't like they sort of needed that big time performance from 3-point range. But you know, Kent making 2 of 3 is encouraging. Again, I mentioned Plumlee before, but a very, very good game from Miles Plumlee. 6 points, 7 rebounds. 2 assists, 3 block shots. Did have 3 turnovers, but was a plus 6. Made all 3 of his field goal attempts. Did not even take a field goal attempt until the second half of this game. But you know, listen, Miles Plumlee's not been playing a lot, and there's a reason for that. I don't think he's particularly good, and the contract is what it is. But you have to say objectively that he played well in this game. There was no. I mean, obviously, I'm not sure he would have been playing if anybody was healthy, of course. But you know, the Hawks have to use him right now, and you know, if he can return that kind of value, it's pretty encouraging. Not to say that he's going to be able to be traded or anything like that on his current contract without some serious compensation going back the other way. But if he plays reasonable minutes, his value will uptick just a little bit. So if the Hawks get in a situation where they absolutely have to dump him, it might become a little bit easier if he's playing, you know, functional minutes. I continue to think that's sort of the ceiling for him, is that the Hawks could reestablish some value with Plumlee as a backup, as a legitimate, you know, NBA backup that could be, you know, worth $5 million a year. He's never going to be the guy who's going to be making $12.5 million, which is what he's actually being paid. So it's going to be a negative contract. But if he plays like he did today, on Saturday, for a large scale sample, he will have some value around the league as a fringe player, even in a league that really does not have a ton going on for centers. But you know, Plumlee has been a solid backup in the past, and he could considerably get back to the lineup if he's healthy. He looked good in this game, again, albeit with all kinds of caveats with the Brooklyn front line and in a small sample size.